to the seance of Taylor Swift. Everyone get out your cloaks and make sure that you draw blood of the nearest person so that we can get this thing going. I've got a goat and a campfire, and we're going to have goat burgers in honor of Taylor Swift. No, I'm joking. I couldn't be more sarcastic. Just, you know, let the record show that was a joke. Hello, I'm Alex Clark. This is Poplitics Live, part two, Decoding the Tortured Poets Department. We are doing the anthology today, which, of course, was the 2 a.m. album that was released as a surprise with 15 additional songs. I've spent some days with it. I needed more time to really go through these songs and listen to them and try to figure out who I think that they're about and also which ones I like and, you know, all of that good stuff. Somebody just asked me at work. They were like, okay, Alex, where does the Tortured Poets Department now, after you've had a good several days, where does it fall for you in your ranking of Taylor Swift albums as a whole? And I've really been thinking about this. So last night, I came to the conclusion that this is for me. And I mean, I have albums, different Taylor albums, obviously, that I love, that I'd be like, this is one of my favorite albums. But there's never been a Taylor album that has been truly skipless. Like, I could go from track one all the way to the end and every song I like enough to not skip it. I've never had a Taylor album like that. There's always like one, two, three skips. This album, skipless for me. At first, there were some songs that I thought, eh, and of course, there's still songs I like more than others, but all of them I enjoy. And if I were to have to be in a car, long car ride and listen from beginning to end, I would enjoy it. And I'm so excited about that because I just haven't had a Taylor album like that so far. The goats are in the chat, by the way. Please thumbs up this video and subscribe to Real Alex Clark on YouTube if you haven't yet. Are we also live on Instagram? We are. So you can watch on YouTube, which I think is more fun because this is where I can see the chat. I can't have, you know, the Poplitics Instagram live chat going on and this. I can't read it all. So we have the YouTube one. So you can watch on Instagram and hello to the Instagram people. But if you really want to be able to talk to me and I read your comments, then watching on YouTube is the way to go. All right. So I have so much to say. And the first thing I want to do, and I know that we're doing the anthology today, but I do have to bring up something really juicy, and I cannot take credit for this. This is somebody else on TikTok figured this out, and I was like, okay, do you remember, hopefully, you watched last, when the heck was that? Last Friday? When did I go live for the album? It's all a blur. It feels like I've lived 20 lifetimes since this album came out. Whenever I did the first live discussing the first half of the album, I mentioned how Fortnite was the one song that was really confusing to me, and I didn't quite understand it. It was a little bit over my head. Well, as I was driving to work today, my friend Brittany Martinez from Evie Magazine, the editor-in-chief of Evie, texted me, and she was like, dude, this makes so much sense. It's got 70,000 likes on TikTok, totally viral, of this girl explaining what Fortnite is about, and now my world has shifted. So there are some songs about Joe Alwyn. 95% are Matty Healy, but there are some songs about Joe Alwyn. One is Fortnite. And I was really floored by this. So I'm just going to read her explanation. This girl just did a phenomenal job. Her name is Layla. That's all it says is Layla. So I can't really tell you anything else about her TikTok of how to find her. But anyway, maybe if you look up Layla Fortnite analysis. All right. So this is what she wrote. I see a lot of people taking the term Fortnite literally to meaning a two-week or short relationship, but in the grand scheme of this song, that's not what it's referring to. The crux of this song is the narrator imagining a future where her and her ex have moved on. It's been several years, and when reflecting back on the relationship and the time that they spent together, it's a fortnight, a short time compared to the time that they've spent apart because it's been so long that they've been apart now. The narrator imagines that in the future, she will be having a miserable life as a functioning alcoholic with depression and with a husband who cheats on her. Meanwhile, her ex is having a great life with a very nurturing, loving wife, which she is feeling animosity and jealous about. She says, you know, in the song, my husband is cheating, I want to kill him, and your wife waters flowers, I want to kill her. You can see the difference in her ex's relationship now in the future and hers. She's miserable and happy, and her ex is flourishing and has this lovely, doting wife. She doesn't hold much animosity specifically towards her ex, though. You can see it from the lines, all of this to say, I hope you're okay, but you're the reason and no one here's to blame. But what about your quiet treason? She's saying, I hope you're doing well, but the end of our relationship is why I'm in this predicament. You don't even know, but this is why I've turned out such a mess. She imagines that her and her ex being on civil terms at this time through... Okay, hold on. She is saying... Our relationship is over. We dated so long ago. In the grand scheme of things, 6 years was a very short time, you know, compared to a lifetime. And I just want you to know that due to our breakup that we couldn't work it out. You've got this lovely wife, but she's imagining that she's going to be miserable and basically loveless in the future. She imagines her ex and her being on civil terms. And you see that in the lyrics, run into you sometimes, ask about the weather. Now you're in my backyard, turned into good neighbors. That doesn't mean that they're literally neighbors. They're living separate lives apart from each other, but she can peek through some fences to see his life and how he's doing, likely via social media or mutual friends. She also reflects on when she tried to get over their relationship when they first broke it off with a miracle move on drug, but the effects were temporary. Now, remember, I was like, what's the miracle move on drug? That is referring to the rebound relationship. The rebound relationship is Maddie Healy. She had that and it went nowhere and it didn't heal her heart because she ended up with a double broken heart from Maddie. Guys, it's all making sense. At the heart of the song, she still loves him and it's ruining her life. She has a lot of regret and reflecting on their relationship. It feels like they were together for a short time. She didn't have him long enough. It was only a fortnight. And at the end of the song, we have Post Malone singing. And this girl on TikTok says, I think he's singing from the ex's perspective when they broke it off. He wanted to reach out to her, but in fear that she wouldn't answer, he didn't. Because he says, thought of calling you, but you don't pick up. He thinks that he's giving her the life that she wanted by letting her go, you know, move to Florida, buy the car you want. But she's actually hurting and misses him. The last line says that the car won't start until she touches him, which infers her life won't be what she wants unless she has him in it. Relating this song to Taylor's life, she fears Joe will eventually be happily married to someone else. And meanwhile, she is doomed to never get her happy ending. Hello! That was an amazing analysis. That was amazing. Amazing. I mean, oh my gosh. Mark, if you don't want me to yell in your ears, leave the live. You're not welcome here. Only people that want me yelling in their ears are allowed. That's how this goes. Turn your volume down. So anyway, I had to share that with you, even though I know we're not spending time on the first album, although I could just still continue to talk about it. The more I've sat with it, the more I've listened to it. Just so many things I could say on each song, obviously. I mean, this is just so fun for me to analyze all these lyrics and everything. But I had to talk about that because it was the one song that I said, I just don't understand what she is trying to say in this. It just seems weird. Now I understand, and now I love it. And I will say that Fortnite and the Tortured Poets Department, the song, have jumped up into my favorites. Every day it's different. Like every day I discover a taste for a new song. And the Tortured Poets Department, I listen to it over and over and over again on the way to work today. Like I just love it. Love it. Okay. Lobotomy Hour is back. Maybe that's what we should start. Maybe we should change the name. Maybe it shouldn't be Poplitics Live. Maybe every week I go live should just be called Lobotomy Hour with Alex Clark. Wouldn't you love it? The Pop Culture Lobotomy Hour. Trademark it. Don't steal it. It's mine. I will yell as loud as I want in my house, Mark. Okay, let's move on. Oh my gosh, what a whirlwind. Hopefully you guys have read my Evie article where I discuss my thoughts, overarching thoughts on the album. I really worked hard on that. I'm very self-conscious about my writing and I really tried. So any English teachers in the chat, I really hope you read it and you could give me a grade on how my writing was and, you know, be as brutally honest as possible. I want to know. I want constructive criticism. But I really tried my hardest. All right. We're starting now where the anthology begins and the first album stopped, which would be technically, if you're looking at the whole anthology album, track 17, we're starting with the Black Dog. Now, the Black Dog, love this song, one of my favorites on the anthology. And the bar, the black dog, which Taylor is referencing that one of her exes, the whole premise of the song is that she is going through a breakup and her ex forgot to turn off his location. They were sharing locations so that probably, I mean, as a celebrity, especially, you're long distance and traveling so much, it's probably nice to be like, oh, where is Taylor today in the world? Where is so-and-so in the world? You know what I mean? I would imagine that would be like really helpful to just be like, oh, what are they doing? You know, because they're always gone with their work. So she's sharing location with this ex, and even though they've broken up, he totally forgot to turn it off. And so she's checking in, which is so relatable. I've done this with every relationship I've shared location with. It's so relatable. And she's seeing that he's going back to the bar that was their favorite bar to go to. It was like their secret special spot. And she's basically saying, how could you enjoy going to this place? I would be so broken to go back there. You know, right now, the breakup is so fresh. How could you go there without me? Now, today, the Black Dog Bar, or somebody that works there, was quoted by some media outlet. They were interviewed, and they said, well, we won't name names, but a certain blonde patron does frequent the Black Dog. Now, no one knew, was this referencing Maddie Healy, or is the person that left their location on that really broke Taylor up, Joe Alwyn? I now believe that this song is about Joe Alwyn. Let's look at the lyrics. I am someone who until recent events you shared your secrets with in your location. You forgot to turn it off. You're in some bar called the Black Dog. It pierces new holes in my heart. I just don't understand how you don't miss me in the Black Dog. Like, I don't understand how you can go to this place which is just saturated with memories of you and I and not think of me or not miss me. When someone plays the starting line and you jump up, but she's too young to know this song, that was intertwined in the magic fabric of our dreaming, old habits die screaming. So it was a habit to check his location. And, you know, that old saying, like, old habits die hard. So instead of old habits die hard, she's like, old habits die screaming, because it is so painful to check his location like she would normally do all the time and see that he's at this bar. She says, I move through the world with the heart broken, my longings stay unspoken. She's devastated about their breakup, and she wants to reach out, but everything's unspoken, everything that she wants to say. I may never open up the way I did for you. All of those best laid plans. You said I needed a brave man, and then you proceeded to play him. You said, you need a brave man, I'm going to be there for you. And then at the end of the day, he didn't step up. He wouldn't marry her. It was all a charade, right? He didn't grow up for her. And I liked this a lot. She says, was it hazing for a cruel fraternity? I pledged, and I still mean it. Old habits die screaming. Like, I pledged to join your fraternity. I was going to be there. It was you and me. Like, I did all the things that I was supposed to do. I jumped through all the hoops I was supposed to jump through. But now I just think it was hazing. It wasn't the real deal. You were just, like, bullying me. You were messing with me. You know? So good. Were you making fun of me with some esoteric joke? Now I want to sell my house, set fire to all my clothes, and hire a priest to come and exorcise my demons. Ooh, excellent. Excellent. How do we feel about the Black Dog? For me, one of my favorites. Aaron says Maddie has covered the starting line, and that is true. One of Maddie Healy's favorite songs is The Starting Line, which is why a lot of people thought that this was about Maddie. There's a good argument that it really could be about either of them, but I did think because of that line it was about Maddie until the bar said, well, yeah, we do have a secret. We have a certain blonde guy that frequents, hinting at Joe Alwyn. So now I believe it's Joe. Oh, the air's on in here. Unless they can't hear it, then I guess we can leave it. Okay. Now we're moving to I'm Gonna Get You Back. This is a Maddie Healy song. There is speculation. Some people believe it's about Olivia Rodrigo. Some people think that it's Maddie Healy. So this is a story about not knowing whether she wants an ex back or if she wants to get revenge for what he did to her. And the stylization of this song is very similar to the 2013 song by the 1975 Falling for You, which in the song Falling for You by the 1975, there's no spaces. In this song, I'm Gonna Get You Back by Taylor Swift, it's all written lowercase, no spaces. So that's why I feel like this is a response to Maddie. She says, and also, I don't think that this is about Olivia Rodrigo because of the chorus. Whether I'm going to be your wife or going to smash up your bike, I haven't decided yet. I'm going to get you back. Whether I'm going to curse you out or take you back to my house, I haven't decided yet, but I'm going to get you back. So am I going to get, yeah, I love that. I'm going to get you back with either revenge, I'm going to get you back, or like, I'm going to get you back and you're going to be mine, like romantically, and we're going to do this together. I think this is a fun song. And she says, I'll tell you one thing, honey. I can take the upper hand and touch your body, flip the script and leave you like a dumb house party, or I might just love you till the end. So again, it's deciding on you hate this person so much, but yet you love them at the same time. And yeah, she's not going to be saying that to Olivia Rodrigo. Hello, let's be honest. So that's what I will say on that. It's not that, like, exciting of a song. Moving on to The Albatross. Okay, this song I have questions about, and we're doing a poll in the chat on if you think that this is about Maddie Healy or Travis Kelce. I think that it could be really either, and we need to have a vote to decide who The Albatross is about, Maddie Healy or Travis Kelce. The entire song is about an albatross, which is a bird that spends its first 6 years of life without touching the land. An albatross, in a metaphorical sense, usually refers to something that causes anxiety or guilt or burdens and encumbers. So who is the albatross in the song? It's Taylor Swift. Taylor is the albatross. She is the burden that whoever she dates is going to have to deal with, contend with, wear. She's the albatross around their neck. Also, an albatross is a big white bird with black tips on the wings. Think of Taylor's 2024 Grammys outfit, the white dress with just black gloves on. She is the albatross. So let's look at these lyrics and why I am undecided on if this is Travis Kelce or Maddie Healy. She says, wise men once said, wild winds are death to the candle. A rose by any other name is a scandal. Caution's issues, he stood, shooting the messengers. They tried to warn him about her. So here she is. She's describing a guy. And people are trying to warn him about her, Taylor. They're like, hey, she is the albatross. She's here to destroy you. Because whatever she touches, it's going to be a media firestorm. People are going to dig into your past. It's going to be this huge drama frenzy. Your fame will reach a level that it's never been before. You're going to have super invasive, your privacy is going to be totally invaded, all of that kind of stuff. Devils that you know raise worse hell than a stranger. Taylor is the devil that he knows. She's the death you chose. You're in terrible danger. So this is warning. Are you sure that you want to be involved with me? Because even I can't even help it, but I will ruin your life. And the bridge, when that sky rains fire on you and your persona non grata. And I'll tell you, I've been there too, and that none of it matters. So she is saying here, which I think is really beautiful, persona non grata is a Latin term. It means an unwelcome person. So when the sky rains fire on you, when the public, when the world is coming after you and you are not welcome any longer in the public space, I will tell you, I've been there too. None of it matters. So this is where I'm like, is it about Maddie and everything that happened when everyone was coming after him saying he's a racist, she needs to break up with him? It was this huge drama thing. And she's saying like, don't worry, I went through the Kim Ye gay. I've been through Kim Ye again in 2016. I've been the person the whole world hates, I'm going to be there for you. I know what it's like. Or is she saying to Travis, if you continue dating me, they're going to come after you. And no matter what happens in the future, if everybody decides to turn on you, Travis, I still love you and I will be there for you because I've been through it too. I crossed my thoughtless heart. I spread my wings like a parachute. I'm the albatross. I swept in at the rescue. So even though I'm the devil that you know, I'm going to be there for you and I'm going to try to rescue you the best that I can. The devil that you know looks now more like an angel. I'm the life that you chose and all this terrible danger. So she's imagining that he's being given the option of don't be with Taylor because it's going to be super hard. Your life, you'll never have peace. You'll never have peace. Folklore reference, right? You'll never have peace with Taylor. You can get out now. And this guy sees what he'd be giving up, but he still chooses her. This is her romanticizing it, that he still chooses her, even though she'll never give him peace. And then at that moment now, instead of an albatross, instead of a giant burden on his life to this man who chooses Taylor, she then is able to say, now I appear not like an albatross, but like an angel. I'm there to rescue you. I can be there for you. It's so romantic. So this song is really a warning. The question is, who is the warning to? Let's see what the poll is saying in the chat. Oh, this is interesting. Imperfect Perfectionist says, aren't there albatrosses on her 1989 album cover? Are they albatrosses or seagulls? Are there black tips on the wings? Paige says, Healy is the bad boy. Why does he need a warning? He's the one to be warned about. Ooh, that is a good argument. So maybe it is Travis. Maybe it is a warning to Travis, and are you sure that you want to do this with me? I can't see what the results of the poll are. It's not letting me. 71% Travis. All right, the chat has spoken. The albatross is about Travis Kelce. Next song. And yes, we're going to be discussing the controversies on the first album, but I'm doing all this first. You're going to have to wait. The next song is Chloe or Sam or Sophia or Marcus. One of my top favorites on the anthology. One of my top favorites. Absolutely love this song. It's so beautiful. My internet is being so slow. Ugh, it's like there's something wrong with the Wi-Fi. Chloe or Sam or Sophia lyrics. Let me try on my phone by taking off the Wi-Fi so I can look at these lyrics. Okay. This song is so freaking beautiful. So, okay. Your hologram stumbled into my apartment, hands in the hair of somebody in darkness named Chloe or Sam or Sophia or Marcus, and I just watched it happen. So did the person that she's dating walk into her apartment and cheat and hook up with somebody in front of her? No, she's saying a hologram. She is imagining the future. She's imagining the future. They're not together. This person is dating somebody else now. As the decade would play us for fools, and you saw my bones out with somebody new who seemed like he would have bullied you in school, and you just watched it happen. Guys, right here. The decade would play us for fools. We spent an entire decade from 2014 to 2024. Her and Maddie Healy had this on again, off again, tumultuous. What if we were to be together, but it never could happen? So she's saying that whole decade of us imagining like, oh, we're going to be together. It's going to be this grand thing. Well, now, obviously, they didn't end up together. And so now they look stupid for wasting all of this time pining over each other. And then it all like crumbled and burst into flames. And so now he sees her bones out with somebody new. He is seeing her. They break up in May. And then by September is the first time that we see Taylor and Travis publicly out as a couple, right? She goes to that football game. You know, they leave in his car, top down, all of that stuff. We all remember. We all know where we were. She's saying, this is somebody who looks like he would have bullied you in high school, and you just watched it happen. You're just watching this, like, you don't contact me, you don't say anything to me, like, it's just so bizarre. And she says, if you want to break my cold, cold heart, just say I loved you the way that you were. If you want to tear my world apart, just say that you've always wondered. So it's like, he's telling her, oh, well, I've always loved who you were. You didn't have to change, you know, all these different things about yourself, which she goes into later in the song. You didn't have to try on all of these different personalities and eras and all of this. Like, I would have loved you from the beginning. And also, I've always wondered what it would be like together. That's crushing to her, for him to say, I've always wondered what it would be like together, but then, like, couldn't make it happen. She says, you said some things that I can't unabsorb. You turned me into an idea of sorts. You needed me, but you needed drugs more. And I couldn't watch it happen. I think that she's looking back. I don't think that this is recent because he's sober now. I think that she's looking back on throughout the last decade, there were times where she might have been single for a little bit and they were kind of talking and it would be like, oh, you know, yeah, I want to be with you. I'm so in love with you. We're going to end up together. But then at the end of the day, at the time, he was struggling with drug addiction and he would end up choosing drugs and couldn't be with Taylor, couldn't be who Taylor needed to be because she couldn't watch it happen. She loves him too much. It's too painful to watch him do drugs. She's like, I can't be with you if you're going to be doing this. She says, I changed into goddesses, villains, and fools. I changed plans and lovers and outfits and rules all to outrun my desertion of you. I tried to be anyone else. I tried to change everything so that I could try to outrun this longing that I have to be with you all of these years. What can I distract myself with? She says, if the glint in my eye traced the depths of your side down that passage in time, going back all these years to when we first met, back to the moment I crashed into you, back into the moment they first met, like so many wrecks do, I was too impaired by my youth to know what to do. So when she's looking back over the past decade, it's like I was just too young in my early 20s to know how to deal with the just all of the things that would have come with being with you. His drug addiction, you know, just all of these different things. It's like the person she wants to be with, but it's too hard, and she was too immature at the time to know how to handle it. So if I sell my apartment and you have some kids with an internet starlet, now this for sure, Maddie Healy, because she is talking about him. Multiple songs on this album reference him sliding into DMs on the internet, hooking up with Instagram chicks, following girls on Instagram. So he's also dating currently an Instagram influencer and model. That's who he's been dating since she's been with Travis. So she is definitely referencing Maddie, but she's like, so if I sell my apartment, you hook up with some, you know, influencer, will that make your memory fade from the Scarlet Maroon? Now, will that make your memory fade from the Scarlet Maroon? Maroon, Midnights, definitely a Maddie Healy song. And she's like, are you really going to be able to drown your sorrows and, like, get over this epic love story that we have just by hooking up with Instagram influencers? Am I really going to be able to get over this epic love story just by selling my apartment? No, like, it's too big. It transcends anything we ever try to do. We'll never truly be able to outrun this love. And then this, oh, somebody else, my boss asked me, he's like, what are your favorite lines on the album? This might be it. This might be it. Can we watch our phantoms like watching wild horses? Cooler in theory, but not if you force it. To be, it just didn't happen. So if you want to break my cold, cold heart, say you love me, tear my world apart. Okay, can we watch our phantoms like watching wild horses? Oh, think about that. Your phantoms of your relationship, the ghosts of what could have been, the future that you'll never have. Do we watch them like wild horses? Wild horses, they're free. They're beautiful. They don't care about anybody else in the world. They're minding, you know, they're just in their own world, happy. And it's, what a beautiful comparison. And so sad. That is so sad. And she says, and if you want to tear my world apart, the song ends, say you'll always wonder, because I wonder, will I always wonder, will I ever get over this? Am I always going to wonder what could have been if you could have manned up and, like, not ran away? Again, just rip my heart out. Put the next goat on the campfire. Let's go. Let's keep it going. Ooh, doesn't that just give you chills? Oh, my gosh, that song. It's one of my top. It's in my top three. It's in my top three for the anthology. Kristen says, is The One, which is the first song on Folklore, about Maddie? Yes. Yes. And knowing that makes so much sense. It's absolutely crazy. Okay. the next song. How did it end? This song, I think, is probably about Joe, but it's not really about Joe. It's about kind of like the embarrassment and humiliation of being the single one in your friends when all of your friends are married. And there are multiple songs about being single in your 30s on the anthology that are really heartbreaking that I relate to so much, because what Taylor is describing in this song is knowing that your married friends are like trying to be there for you and asking you, how did it end? You know, tell me everything. And then at the end of the day, they go home to their husband and they're like, oh, can you believe it? Thank God I have you and I don't have to deal with what she's dealing with and like be out there trying to date or like find somebody now. And it's just like, I know every single time I confide in my married girlfriends, my best friends, about, you know, some bad date that I have or just my struggles of not being married yet and how sad that makes me. Every time I talk to them, it's like they love me and I know that they care about me and they give me advice as good as they can. But I always know at the end of the day, they're saying to their husband, like, oh, Alex, still, this guy didn't work out with Alex. It's just like isn't that so sad for her? And then it's like, but I get to be with you. And it's just like this weird living parallel lives compared to your friends when you are single in your 30s but want to be married and they're all married and they have what you want. And just that humiliation of like it keeps not working out. So Taylor says, we hereby conduct this postmortem. All right, so we're going to conduct postmortem. We're going to look at this thing after it's dead. We're going to examine the relationship after it's done. He was a hothouse flower to my outdoorsman. So this is a flower that wants to be indoors, but Taylor wants to go out and explore. That's totally Joe and her. Our maladies were such we could not cure them. You know, our problems were too big. We couldn't fix it over 6 years. And so a touch that was my birthright became foreign. Like, they were meant to be. He was her birthright. They were destined. It was all supposed to be together, but then it became a foreign thing. Like, him touching her, them being together, just became like, it became foreign. So then she's making fun of like, all right, everybody, let's all my friends, let's gather around and dissect my relationship again. So she says, come one, come all, it's happening again. The empathetic hunger descends. We'll tell no one what happened, her and Joe. We'll tell no one what happened except all of our friends. We must know, how did it end? We were blind to unforeseen circumstances. We learned the right steps to different dances, and we fell victim to interlopers' glances. Lost the game of chance. What are the chances? Soon they'll go home to their husbands smug because they know that they can trust him, then feverishly calling their cousins. So also she knows, even though they're her best friends, like, they're not only going to go home and tell their husband everything and be smug, like, ooh, man, can you believe? So sad for Taylor. But then they're also calling their cousins and being like, can you believe what happened to Taylor? And like discussing it. Chorus, guess who we ran into at the shops? This is her friends talking, walking in circles like she was lost. Didn't you hear? They called it off. One gasp and then, oh, how did it end? So she's imagining her friends gossiping with their other friends about her relationship ending. The bridge, say it once again with feeling, how the death rattle breathing, silenced as the soul was leaving, the deflation of our dreaming, leaving me bereft and reeling, my beloved ghost in me, sitting in a tree, D-Y-I-N-G. Really beautiful song. Alyssa says, Healy is almost like her Mr. Big. I fully agree. Maddie Healy, and this is only the millennials will understand this, Maddie Healy is Mr. Big to Taylor Swift. And that right there explains everything to millennials that are confused about this album. Hannah says, this song is so beautiful. I was wanting orchestral undertones and didn't get much in the first part, but the second part has it. Yes. Yes. Maddie says, the bridge with broken hearts. Courtney says, she's in her late 20s. She's single and all her friends are married. Yeah. All right, the next song. Oh, my gosh. Already, again, we're 45 minutes in. How does this keep happening to me? Oh, here we go. So High School. Now, I basically explained this already last time, so I won't spend time on this one. I did it in the last live, but obviously this is about Travis Kelce. Now, here's something new that I will share about this, and the song is beautiful, and I absolutely love it. You know, whatever. Okay. One of my favorite songs on the anthology, but here's some new stuff that I think is really juicy. So Taylor has shared two videos of her behind the scenes. One that's showing snippets of the last several weeks of her life hanging out with Travis. There's like three short, you know, seconds of video of her being with Travis and their relationship. And recording a song. And so you might think, well, she just came out with this album. The showing her being in the studio recording a song, it's probably, you know, her recording the Torture Poets Department. Not so fast. There is another video that she just released, I think yesterday, a bunch of snippets of her recording different songs for the Tortured Poets Department. Now, I want you to tell me, I want you to look at this. All of that video is in black and white, okay? The other video, everything is in color. The videos of her with Travis in color. The video of her recording on that video, the one that includes all the Travis stuff, color. Then other video, all Tortured Poets Department, black and white. What I am predicting for the next album is it is going to be the Travis Kelce album. It's going to be a totally mushy, fully I'm in love. I think that it's going to explore, and I hope, fingers crossed, it's going to explore this sound that she dabbles in with So High School, which is this kind of alternative pop rock sound, which I've wanted her to do for forever. It's very alternative. It's giving She's So High. So if you remember the song She's So High, who sings that? She's So High by Tal Bachman. Remember that song? It's like in the soundtrack of some early 2000s movie. But that song, that like early 2000s pop rock song that was in like tons of rom-coms, that is what I want her to explore. And she has talked about like maybe exploring rock before. So I'm hoping that this Travis album, it's going to be really this theme about like high school, like feeling like you're with somebody that brings out this like childlike wonder in you. Like it's so exciting and so pure and just so full of joy that it feels like you're in high school, like your first high school love. Love it. So anyway, I think what she's saying is that I think that the footage of her recording and it's in color in that Travis video, I think that that is her recording the next album. That's what I think, because everything else is in black and white. So I think that's her recording Torture Poets. I think that she's already recording songs for the next album, and she's giving a preview that that album is going to be in color. It's going to be full lovey-dovey, romance, all the things. This album is black and white because it's dreadful. It's a death. It's a death of everything of her life, basically everything that she's ever known. She burnt the Lover House down on the Eras Tour. There's a reason why it's been burnt to the crisp, because it's over. How Maddie wove himself in through all these eras. He was like the missing link through everything, the invisible string, if you will, although that song is about Joe Alwyn. But he was the missing link through everything, and now that's done. She's burnt the house down. This was her last thing. I had to get all of this out of my system. I don't think, besides singing some songs, the surprise songs at the Eras Tour, I do not think she will tour this album. I think this is a therapeutic album. I think that this album was purely for herself and for the Swifties, the diehard Swifties, not the Swifties, the bandwagoners who jumped on because the Eras Tour was popular on TikTok. Many of you are fake. Many of you will fade. The real ones who've been here for a decade plus, we know this is why this album is so hard to explain to the locals, if you will, because they don't understand how layered all of these things are. They don't understand how like one song connects to like six other songs in her discography. So it's very difficult to explain this album and the meanings to like your average new on the block Swiftie or somebody that's not a Swiftie at all. It's like it takes too much time. There's too much lore. And that's why it's taken me 40, you know, an hour to go through like five songs. So the new album will be more, I think, radio singles. I think it'll just be like this really poppy, fun rock album. And this was just, she had to get it out. She had so much to say. She had to finally confess, basically, all the Maddie Healy stuff, because it's been, you know, involved in so much of her work and none of us knew. And so that really gives us answers as to who so many songs were about that, like, Swifties were like, I don't know, it's just like a nice song, but like, we could never pin it to any certain person, and that's because it was Maddie. That's why. Okay. Do you agree with me? Everybody agrees. See? Yes. Laura says, agreed, this album is not for people that are not true fans. Exactly. That's why, like, it's exhausting to try to explain so much of the symbolism and things, and people are like, this album sucks. See, as a non-Swiftie, somebody says I'm convincing them that these lyrics are really good. They are. They are. This is what I've been trying to tell people for so many years. And for some reason, the conservatives don't want to listen to me. All right. Okay. Moving on now. I Hate It Here. Another one of my favorites on the anthology. Love this song. This song is for the book girlies. This song is for those who like just love escaping real life into a book or a movie or a show and imagining yourself in a different time period and just like picturing like a different magical fairy tale life. This is for us. It is the book talk girlies here. This song is beautiful. So she said, this is also sort of about Maddie in the beginning because she's like, quick, tell me something awful. Like you're a poet trapped inside the body of a finance guy. Tell me all your secrets. All you'll ever be is my eternal consolation prize. Ugh. All of these years, she's dated all of these guys, knowing that she really wanted to be with Maddie. She finally got him, but he wasn't the real prize, right? He isn't the real trophy. He isn't the guy that she actually ends up with in the end. He was a consolation prize. She waited all this time, and he's her eternal consolation prize. You see, I was a debutante in another life, but now I seem to be scared to go outside. If comfort is a construct, I don't believe in good luck now that I know what's what. I hate it here, so I will go to secret gardens in my mind that people need a key to get to. The only one is mine. No mid-sized city hopes and small-town fears. I'm there most of the year because I hate it here. I hate it here. I think she's describing years past of, since she can't have him, she goes to these secret areas in her mind where she's imagining them together. But this is where I say, like, this is for the book girlies. Now, here's what I love. All the Christians are pissed off about this album, which we'll get to. But here's what I want you to know. Because of this song, all the progressives are mad. Every single group, the blacks are mad, the progressives are mad, the Republicans are mad. Everybody's pissed off at Taylor Swift for this album. And that's how you know we stay winning. Because everybody's unhappy. Everybody's unhappy. The progressives are mad because of this line where she says, my friends used to play a game where we would pick a decade we wish that we could live in instead of this. I'd say the 1830s, but without all the racists and getting married off for the highest bid. And everyone would look down because it wasn't fun now. Seems like it was never even fun back then. Nostalgia is a mind's trick. If I'd been there, I'd hate it. It was freezing in the palace. Okay, so what is she saying? What is she saying? This is so deep. She is saying that she is the friend who, like, everybody's playing this fun game. Oh, what decade would you want to live in? You know, it's almost like they're kids. And it's, like, describing a group of friends, like, doing this fun game. It's very silly to them. Like, oh, I'd want to be in the 70s. I'd want to be the 80s. And Taylor's like, well, I'd want to be in the 1830s, probably because, you know, lots of the poetry and the romanticism and all that kind of stuff. But, you know, without the racists and selling off women to be married at the highest bid. So Taylor is saying, like, I'm the friend that always brings the reality check. And then everybody freezes me out. Nobody wants to be my friend anymore because it's like I'm the only one that's willing to say the unfun truth. See, she says everyone would look down because it wasn't fun now. I've ruined the game. I've explained reality. I've shared the truth that no one's ever allowed to say. She's very like, because I can't even be with my one true love, which is Maddie. You know, she's very cynical. She's becoming a cynical person. I hate it here, so I will go to lunar valleys in my mind. When they found a better planet, only the gentle survived. I dreamed about it in the dark, the night I felt I might die. I go to this place most of the year because I hate it here. I'm lonely, but I'm good. I'm bitter, but I swear I'm fine. I'll save all my romanticism for my inner life and I'll get lost on purpose. So see, all my romanticism, all of these hopes I have of wanting to be a wife, being a mother, having like a soulmate, having somebody who I can go home to at the end of the day, I guess it's just all romanticism and I just can only imagine it and I can only go there in my mind and I will just save that for my private thoughts and I'll just like go through this life knowing I'm probably never going to have that. She follows back up with this sentiment in the prophecy, which of course we'll discuss soon. She says, I read about it in a book when I was a precocious child. So when I was a child who didn't know any better, I believed that these fairy tales were real. I believed that everyone gets their one true love and they're happily ever after. But that was just when I was a child and I didn't know anything. Wow. See how good this is? This is why, like, this isn't for the locals. This album is not for... It's not for the... honestly, you have to be kind of a smart person to understand Taylor Swift lyrics. And that's really the crux of it. And everybody will roast me for saying that, that doesn't get her. Like people scoff at that. And I'm like, no, you actually do have to be. You have to be a little... You have to be kind of intelligent to understand all of the different themes that she discusses in her music. Oh, I like this. Ashley says it's also calling out her social awkwardness. 100%. 100%. Taylor has always felt like she's the odd one, that she is the outsider looking in. She's felt that way her entire life. Okay, moving on. Thank you, Amy. The song about Kim Kardashian. The title obviously spells out Kim. This whole song is referencing all of their conflicts, including the leaked phone call involving Kim. And, you know, she's talked about her a lot with other different songs. Of course, Look What You Made Me Do was about her and Kanye, mostly Kanye. But this song is specifically for Kim. All the time that you were throwing punches, I was building something and I couldn't wait to show you it was real. So all the time, you know, from 2016 to now, Kim is throwing punches. Kim's dragging Taylor. She's trying to ruin Taylor's life. She's trying to get Taylor canceled, but she's been building something and she couldn't wait to show her what it is, which is now she is the biggest star in the entire world. Kim thought that she ruined her. Taylor comes back, you know, the Eras Tour, the highest grossing world tour in history, biggest albums in history. Taylor is untouchable. And so she can't wait to rub it in Kim's face of, look what you tried to do and you not only didn't succeed, but you failed miserably. And you'll never be as famous as me and you'll never achieve what I've achieved. It's kind of like rub it in her face kind of a thing. I screamed F you, Amy, you know, F you, Kim, to the night sky as the blood was gushing. But I can't forget the way you made me feel. This or made me heal. I can't forget the way that you made me heal. I was so mad. I was screaming F you, Kim, to the sky. Blood is running. I've been hurt. But you made me heal. You made me heal. And this is pretty serious because anyone that knows Taylor and Andrea, you know, Andrea, her mother, is a precious woman. And she says, everyone knows that my mother is a saintly woman, but she used to say that she wished you were dead. That is her saying, like, if my mom literally could say that I wish you were dead, like, you are an evil, awful person for my mom to say that because Andrea is not like that. Kind of very similar. Remember when Justin Bieber was like, and my mom hates you, but she loves everyone. Remember that line? Like, that's kind of like what it's like. I pushed each boulder up the hill. I'm working hard. I'm working hard to build this. But your words are still ringing in my head, you know, telling me I'm nothing, that I'm a snake, but I'm building my empire as I'm listening to you. It's fueling me to succeed. I wrote 1,000 songs that you find uncool. I built a legacy that you can't undo. But when I count the scars, there's a moment of truth. There actually wouldn't be any of this. All that I've achieved in the last couple years now, there really wouldn't be any of this if there hadn't been you, because Kim and Kanye pushed her into new heights by making her like start over and reassess and like rebrand and do all of this. And so she's kind of being like really petty and snarky. And she says, so I changed your name and any real defining clues. Which she didn't. I mean, she capitalized the letters so that it's very clear the song is about Kim. But, you know, it says Amy, but all the letters that spell K-I-M are capitalized. So she's being, Taylor's being petty. And she says, and one day your kid comes home singing a song that only us two is going to know about you. And I love that Taylor addressed this because I have thought about this for years, since 2016, since this has gone down. And as Kim's kids get older, you know, North is on TikTok. She's always like talking about different artists she likes, and she's very in the know with music. Like, definitely, I've always thought between all the Kardashian kids, isn't that going to be weird when Taylor has some hit song on the radio that all the kids are singing? And then does the family talk about openly, like, oh, this song is about mommy and daddy? Like, if Look What You Made Me Do is played at some function and North is there as she gets older, like, is North going to know that that is about her mom and dad? And so I love that Taylor says, like, that's going to happen. Your kid's going to come home. They're going to be singing my music because I'm the greatest artist that's, you know, one of the greatest artists that's ever been. And that's going to hurt you because you will know that that song's about you. So good. So I love it. So she's like, at the end of the day, thank you for ruining my life because now you've made me a stronger, better artist. Excellent. Yes. Megan says she's putting closure on all the open things. All the open things, she's putting closure on it. And she says that's the gag. Kim did that to her, saying, well, I didn't say Taylor's name when she posted the snakes. Oh, that's right. So when Kim tweeted like a bunch of snakes or whatever, National Snake Day or whatever she said, people were asking about that. She's like, I didn't say Taylor. I didn't name anyone. And so Taylor's like capitaling her letters of the name Amy. Thank you, Amy. And she's like, well, I'm naming you, but I didn't actually say who it was about. So Taylor's getting her back for that. So good. Okay. Almost done. Actually, no, we're not. Okay. I Look in People's Windows. This is my other favorite song on the Albatross. Basically, I won't spend a lot of time on this. The synopsis of what this song means and why I think this song is so beautiful is that I look in people's windows like some kind of deranged window. I'm attending Christmas parties from the outside, looking in people's windows just to see if you're at their table. What if your eyes looked up and met mine one more time? Taylor is describing going through a breakup and then scrolling on social media, looking at your ex's friends' Instagrams and family's Instagrams to see if you can get a glimpse of them and what they're up to, and peering in as an outsider to see how you're doing, and just being like, I want to see your eyes again. Like, I hope there's a video. I hope, like, as somebody's at a dinner party and they're panning across the table, I'll get a glimpse of you because you miss them so much and you want to see what they're up to. Real, recognize, real. That's what this song is about. Looking and stalking social media to see what your ex is up to. Next song. The Prophecy. This song absolutely wrecked me, destroyed me. It's like the realest song she's ever written, one of them, and at this time in my life, the one that resonates the most on the album. This song is about yearning for marriage and kids and a family and having someone to call yours at the end of the day, but feeling like it's starting to become like cynical in the way that you think, well, maybe it's not like written in my destiny. Like maybe I'm never going to get this. Maybe I'm only going to be like this super famous celebrity that has all of this money. I mean, I don't relate to that part, but I'm just saying this is what she's saying. She's like, I just feel like I'm getting all the fame I want. I'm getting the career success that I want. I have all the money that I could want. But it doesn't actually matter at the end of the day. Like, what I want is a husband. What I want is to be a mom. What I want is, like, that one person. And I'm starting to feel like, what if it's not in the prophecy? Like, what if this isn't what has been decided for me and I'm just never going to get it and I have to accept it? I struggle with this every day. Every day I feel that way. When I talk to my best friends about it, and I say this to everybody. I'm like, I truly am just starting to believe that I'm never going to get married. Like, it's just not going to happen for me. And I start to think about that. Like, maybe I was meant to have like success on my show, and I was meant to like kind of mentor all these other girls and all these other like married women my age that are doing all the things that I want to do and facilitating the information and like bringing the conversations forward so that they can learn the things and they can put those things into practice in their own relationships and in their parenting and doing all of this, all the things that I wish that I could do. But maybe like, well, what if that isn't like the role that God has decided for me? Like, what if I'm always just going to be doing this and watching everybody else from the outside achieve those things? That is how I feel. That is how Taylor feels. She says, I thought I caught lightning in a bottle, but it's gone again. And it was written, I got cursed like Eve got bitten. So I thought that I had lightning in a bottle, whether that's with Maddie or Joe. I thought I found the person, whoever. But now it's gone again. So that didn't work out. And maybe I'm just cursed like Eve, Adam and Eve, and this is a punishment. I just walk around my house, and she says, a lesser woman would have lost hope. A greater woman wouldn't beg. But I look to the sky, and I get on my knees, and so she's praying to God, saying, please change the prophecy. I don't want money. I just want someone who wants my company. Let it once be me. Who do I have to speak to change the prophecy? So she's like, God, like, what do I have to do? Who do I have to speak to change the destiny that I have of never getting to be married and have kids? Cards on the table, mind play out like fools in a fable. Even statues crumble if they're made to wait. A strong woman, a statue will crumble if they're made to wait. I'm so afraid that I've sealed my fate. No sign of soulmates. I'm just a paperweight in shades of gray, spending my last coin so someone will tell me it'll be okay. I sound like an infant feeling like the very last drops of an ink pen. A greater woman stays cool, but I howl like a wolf at the moon and I look unstable. One of her saddest songs ever, I think. And this also has very like Stevie Nicks vibes. Cassandra is about the public's reaction to Taylor Swift calling out Kim and Kanye in the first place. And when she first called them out and said, they are liars, nobody believed her. My lips are so dry from talking. I have to get a drink. When she first came out, when this whole phone call debacle came out, nobody believed Taylor. They said she was a liar, that she was a snake. And then 2020 comes around, the full phone call is released. Taylor is vindicated, but nobody says crap. Nobody comes to Taylor's defense. Nobody apologizes for being wrong about trying to cancel Taylor and saying that she was a liar. And then it comes out, obviously, in the last, I don't know when that was, year or two, whenever Kanye like completely lost his mind and went absolutely bat, you know what, crazy, that was Taylor being like, hello, like I literally told you all of this, but you tried to burn me at the stake. I told you this guy was a psycho freak creep and nobody wanted anything to do with me and no one since has apologized to her. So she says, I was in my new house placing daydreams, patching up the crack along the wall. I pass it and I lose track of what I'm saying because that's where I was when I got the call. The phone call that was recorded. When the first stone's thrown, they're screaming in the streets. There's a riot to cancel Taylor. And they're saying, burn the bitch. And then when the truth comes out, it's quiet. Exactly what I just said. Everybody's burn her, burn her, burn her at the stake. She's, you know, the witch that needs to be burned. And then when the truth comes out about Kanye and that everything Taylor was saying was true, nobody says anything. They don't acknowledge that everyone was wrong and that Taylor was right. So Taylor is Cassandra. So they killed Cassandra first because she feared the worst. And I tried to tell the town, I tried to warn you that this guy was an absolute psychotic freak. But you filled my cell with snakes, like all the snakes. You filled my cell. You wrote on my Instagram. You put snakes in my Instagram comments. Do you believe me now? Do you now see that I was right? I was in my tower weaving nightmares, twisting all of my smiles into snarls. They say, what doesn't kill you makes you aware. What happens if it becomes who you are? It's like people, she's saying like, how dare you? All of you are just like, oh, well, see, you learn from it. Like that was like a good, important lesson. And she's like, no, it wasn't just a lesson. Like this changed the trajectory of my life. It is completely written on my soul for forever what happened to me that year. She says, the bridge, I was on to something. They all said nothing. This is about the Kardashian family. Blood's thick, but nothing like a payroll. So they never spared a prayer for my soul. You can mark my words that I said it first. In a morning warning, no one heard. No one heard. Not a single word was heard. Kim. Kanye, the whole Kardashian clan. That is that song. So Taylor is Cassandra. Yes, Casey says, in Greek mythology, Cassandra is a prophetess that could foretell the future, but no one would ever believe her. So Taylor is definitely likening herself to that. And there was also all of that Greek mythology imagery in the Karma music video. Remember the one where she's dressed like the devil in hell? And everyone was like, this is proof! Taylor Swift is demonic! She's demonic! She was referencing all the Greek mythology, and of course she was talking, that was really Scooter Braun she was portraying in hell. But, you know, none of the facts matter. The context of the songs never matters. She goes through all these different Greek goddesses and gods and whatever in that music video. But, you know, what does it matter anyway? Nobody's listening. All right, the next song is Peter. Okay, so this song is, this song reveals that Cardigan was about Maddie Healy. And now when you look at the Cardigan lyrics again, it's going to break your heart. She talks about Peter losing Wendy because he couldn't grow up. And then now this song is called Peter. And she's talking about timing. You told me that you were going to grow up. You said that you were going to come find me. So Maddie, obviously earlier, like years ago when they were younger, he was like, you know, I'm going to get my life together. I'm going to grow up. I'm going to stop doing drugs. I'm going to be able to be who you need. And we're going to finally make this work. And then at the end of the day, he couldn't grow up. She says, you said you were going to come find me. Words from the mouths of babes. We were too young and you were making promises that you could not keep. At the time, we said it was just goodbye for now. So when they couldn't be together earlier, over the last decade, it was just always temporary. It's goodbye for now. It's not goodbye forever because we're going to be together. You said that you were going to come and get me, but you were 25, and the shelf life of those fantasies has expired. Lost to the Lost Boys chapter of your life, which is a 1975 reference, his bands and stuff. She says, the woman who sits by the window, the woman who's been waiting, has now turned off the light. I'm done waiting. Your time is up. You decided to not grow up. You're staying in Neverland. Very sad. That's Peter. The Bolter. I don't like this song. This one's a skip for me. I think this is just talking about finally leaving all of this crap behind and getting out of it and starting over. I mean, that's all I'm going to say about it. I don't like this song. It's boring. That's basically what it's about. Okay. And then Robin. All I'm going to say about Robin, not much to say on that either. Robin is a song dedicated to Aaron Dessner's baby. Aaron Dessner has a child named Robin, and so it's just a sweet song. You know, think of, like, Never Grow Up. It's just, like, a sweet song from a parent to a child saying, like, stay in your innocence. I want to watch you play and have fun and keep you in your sweetness and not tell you about the evils of the world and all the things that are going to happen to you. So this is, like, a good song. You'll really like it if you're a parent. And that was very sweet of her to write a song for Aaron's son, Aaron Dessner. It's, you know, Aaron or Jack Antonoff are the two, like, main producers for all of her songs. So her and Aaron made that song together. I don't know. Honestly, I'm like, I don't, that song could have been left off for me. Like, I think there could have been some editing on the second half. And that's a song that I would have edited. Like, do that, make it nice. You know, Aaron can have it. I don't know why it needed to be on the album. It's just, like, not that great of a song to me. And then we will end with The Manuscript. And this song is really juicy when you find out what she's talking about. So this goes back to the All Too Well 10-minute version music video, the short film with Sadie Sink. And Taylor is describing, which, of course, All Too Well is about her relationship with Jake Gyllenhaal. The whole Red album, you know, is about Jake. And when she, what The Manuscript is about is Taylor going through the making of the 10-minute version music video short film and having to revisit to make the short film all of the memories that she has with Jake and reflecting back on that as she's older and remembering how much pain she was in with that breakup and sharing additional facts about what she was dealing with post Jake Gyllenhaal breakup all these years later as an adult. She's reminded making the short film about what she went through and reflecting on it. And then at the end of this song, it's so beautiful because at the end of this song, she basically says, like, now, you know, I wrote that song years ago. I've performed it a million times. Now I've made this short film about it. And now I'm able to finally, like, it's truly not my song anymore. Like, now this song is yours. All Too Well is one of her most popular songs with her fans, a deep track it's probably her most popular deep track with Swifties. And she's saying, like, this song used to be so painful for me, I couldn't perform it or whatever, and now, like, it's not my song anymore, it's yours, which is so therapeutic and beautiful about her songwriting, is that once she, which is why I think this album, The Tortured Poets Department, is, like, now we're at a clean slate to go move on to Travis and, like, the rest of her life, because she finally got all this out of her system, and now these songs are ours to decide what they mean for us and relate them to our own personal lives and relationships. So Taylor says, now and then she reads the manuscript of the entire Tord affair. Now and then I read the manuscript for the short film of the entire Tord affair. They compared their licenses. He said, I'm not a donor, but I give you my heart if I need it. She rolled her eyes, said, you're a professional. He said, no, just a good Samaritan. He said that if the sex was half as good as the conversation was, soon they'd be pushing strollers, but soon it was over. So I think Jake is saying, like, one, I think Jake was telling her that the sex was bad, which makes sense because he was way older and she was way young. And it has always been my theory that Jake is who Taylor lost her virginity to. And so he's like, well, you know, like, our conversation is so good and I keep you around, but, like, the sex isn't good and I'm looking for somebody, you know, more on that front. And we would be married and be together if that was the case. But since it's not, like, it's over, is what I think she's saying. And so at the time, after the breakup, she found herself wishing she was 30. She was trying to be grown up. She made coffee every morning in a French press because she was trying to be this, like, grown up woman that, you know, she thought he wanted. And after the breakup, she says she only ate kids cereal. She couldn't sleep unless it was in her mother's bed. And then she dated boys who were her own age with dartboards on the backs of their doors. She thought about how he said since she was so wise beyond her years, everything had been above board, but now she's not sure. So at the time, he was so much older than her, and he was saying, like, well, because you're so mature for your age, like, this is totally fine. But now as an adult, she's looking at this, seeing how young she was, how immature she was, and how he was so much older, and now she's not sure that all of that was really okay for him to be dating her. And so she's saying the professor said to write what you know, looking backwards might be the only way to move forward. And then the actors were hitting their marks and the slow dance was alight with the sparks and the tears fell in synchronicity with the score. And at last she knew what the agony had been for. So Taylor is describing whoever, probably her record label or something. The professor said, write what you know and looking backwards might be the way to move forward. Like, you making this short film about this relationship and this song, which is one of your best songs you've ever written, might be the way for you to finally get over it. And so she's on the set directing. She directed this herself. She's on set watching Sadie Sink, and I can't think of his name, but she's watching the actors play her and Jake. And they're hitting their marks and everything's going well. And she's crying and the music is going watching this film. And she's like, okay, now I understand what all of this has been for. Me playing out the pain of this relationship, me writing these songs, everything I've done. And now you understand why I wrote these words and fought the wars. Now I'm getting mixed up, but in You Are In Love. You know what I mean? She's like, I do this for you. She's saying, now I know what it's been for. The only thing that's left is the manuscript. It's just words now. It's one last souvenir from my trip to your shores. This song is yours. Now and then I can reread it, but the story isn't mine anymore. And that is the end on everything before Maddie Healy, and now going forward we'll have after. We've got before MH and after MH. ta-da. Well, I thought that was a beautiful song to end this album on, like truly end the album. I just thought the manuscript was so stunningly gorgeous. That story. Wow. All right. So now, let's quickly discuss. Let's discuss the controversy on the album. I thought that I explained a lot of this in my first live, and I also thought that I explained this in my article that I wrote for Evie Magazine, which I wish you would read so that you could understand this. But let me look this up. He said, watching Christians praise this new album of promiscuity and perversion while simultaneously rebuking Biden for allowing men in women's locker rooms is peak American fake morality in 2024. And then he circles how many songs have swear words in them, explicit warnings. Almost half the songs on Taylor Swift's new album contain explicit lyrics, make fun of Christians, and straight up blaspheme God. Is this the music you want your kids listening to? Do you think I'm overreacting? Read the lyrics below and decide for yourself. And then he lists the lyrics. Okay. So, let's bring up, he says, or he brings up Badaddy, I Love Him. This is what I explained on the live, and I also explain in my article for Evie. This is not, everybody's like, she's mocking Christians and mocking God. And I'm like, no, she is not. You do not understand what this song is about. This song is about the petition that circled in the media, the left-wing media, the cancel culture vultures, which is what I write in the Evie article, that were telling Taylor, that had thousands and thousands of signatures from Swifties, girl Swifties. That's why she's saying like the Sarahs and Hannahs and their Sunday best clutching their pearls saying, oh, what a mess. She's just poking fun at like, she's saying like, it's another way of saying like holier than thou. She's not talking about Christians in the song. This entire song is about the fury over Taylor Swift dating Matty Healy because to the left, he wasn't progressive enough because he makes like silly kind of like raunchy jokes and jokes that kind of make fun of race and all that kind of stuff. You know, he's not... Matty Healy is not like this politically correct guy. And so everyone wanted her to break up with him for that reason. So this song has nothing to do with Christianity. This song has nothing to do with Christians. And it's not mocking God. She's mocking Swifties. Again, something you wouldn't know if you're a local who has never listened to Taylor Swift before and has no idea about what any of this album is about or about what happened last year, this time with Matty Healy, the articles that were written, the viral petitions and all of these other things. It was called like Speak Up Now, Taylor, this is your time to defend minorities. And, you know, what he made some joke about Ice Spice. And so, you know, that was like this whole thing of like, he's a racist and you can't be with him. And so this song is Taylor's huge middle finger to cancel culture. And she says, you will not tell me who I'm allowed to date. I decide. And you will not tell me when my career is up. I will never let what happened in 2016 happen again. No one is going to tell me when my career is over. I decide when my career is over. So really, conservatives especially should be loving that song. Everybody's getting hung up because she says the word Sunday best. She's just saying, she's talking about these people in their empath's clothing. She's just describing holier. It's another way of saying holier than thou, but it rhymes. For clutching their pearls and being so aghast, like, oh, I'm so much better than you. And she's making fun of basically white liberal women. That's what the song is about. So that's what I will say about But Daddy, I Love Him. The smallest man who ever lived. I would have died for your sins. Instead, I just died inside. Okay. Is Taylor Swift saying that she could die for someone's sins? Like, literally, you know, she's the giver of everlasting eternal life? No. Taylor Swift is just making is just figurative speech. She's just like, I would have given everything up for you. I would have died for you. I would have put it all on the line for you. I would forgive you for any transgressions because I want to be with you so badly. But instead, since you didn't choose to be with me, now I just die inside. Okay. It's really not that deep on that song. Now, the song Guilty as Sin. Oh, wait, sorry. Let me go back. Also on, he's still wrong. See, he doesn't know what he's talking about because he says like, but Daddy, I Love Him. And then he lists the Sarahs and Hannahs in their Sunday best, clutching their pearls sign. What a mess. I just learned these people try and save you because they hate you. He doesn't understand what that's about. And then he says another song and then he just lists. He says another song, but it's still, but Daddy, I Love Him. See, he doesn't even know. This is what I'm saying. Like, you're getting this information from people who do not understand the topics and the themes of the songs and the context of the songs. And that's who you're letting tell you what these songs are about. Why would you not listen to somebody who actually has been a diehard fan for over 13 years, who is sitting here telling you what the song is about? But, you know, whatever. So he says in another song, but it's not, "But Daddy, I Love Him." She says, "God save the most judgmental creeps who say they want what's best for me, sanctimoniously performing soliloquies I'll never see." She's talking about the petition, because this Swiftie made this petition. It was called the Speak Up Now petition. Page Six reported it May 22nd, 2023. Taylor Swift fans launch Speak Up Now campaign over Maddie Healy controversies. The Grammy winner's supporters have penned an open letter asking Swift to address Maddie Healy's many controversies and their rumored romance. The Speak Up Now campaign requests that Taylor Swift give more than a simple apology. This is cancel culture for the bigoted remarks that the 1975 frontman has made headlines for in the past. So this is what she means by judgmental soliloquy. She's like, I'm not reading this. I'm not reading this bull crap that you're saying, because this is what the girl wrote. Use your platform responsibly and intentionally. You know, listen and learn. Advocate for inclusivity, celebrate diversity, and promote empathy and understanding. This is cancel culture BS at its finest, and conservatives should be celebrating this song, saying, yes, we're not doing this game. But they're getting hung up because they don't understand figurative speech and analogies. So that's what that song is about. Nothing about mocking Christians and conservatives. The song that I would say is, sure, I will concede and say the most controversial would be Guilty as Sin, where she is talking about imagining being with this guy, but they're not together. She's still in a relationship, and she's thinking about what she's discussing, like what she would be willing to do to be with this guy, which is Maddie. What if I roll the stone away? They're going to crucify me anyway. What if the way you hold me is actually what's holy? If long-suffering propriety is what they want from me, they don't know how you've haunted me so stunningly. I choose you and me religiously. Okay. Taylor Swift is not a Christian. So what is Taylor Swift saying when she's saying these lyrics? Taylor is saying, like, I'm so hopelessly devoted to you religiously. What is religion? Religion is something that you are completely, totally devoted to. And Taylor is trying to say an analogy about how devoted she is to him, that she's willing to come back from the dead. She's willing to come out of hiding, roll the stone away, obviously referencing Jesus coming back from the dead. Would I have chosen this? No, but she's not a Christian. So it's like, okay, this is what she's saying. I would roll the stone away. They're going to crucify me anyway. If I come back from the dead, if I leave this relationship, no matter what, if I'm with you or I'm not, if I break up with Joe, I'm crucified. If I date you because you're like this bad boy who everybody's going to think isn't progressively left enough, they're going to crucify me. So it's a lose-lose situation. What does it matter? Let's just be together. That is what Taylor is saying. What if the way you hold me is actually what's holy? I mean, okay, artists have been doing this for decades. Madonna, Like a Prayer, right? Like, this is something, I'm not saying that it's totally right. I wouldn't have chosen it if I was a songwriter, but also she's not a Christian, and she's using like religious symbolism and analogies to discuss something. It's like, is Taylor Swift satanic? No, I don't believe Taylor Swift is satanic. And I would also like to remind you that when Elvis first came out, the Christians were like, he's satanic the way he moves his hips. The Beatles, Marxists, everybody said they were satanic. You know, Madonna, all of these people. This happens every decade, whoever the biggest star is. By the way, all of the people that are tagging me in tweets, Sean Foyt or whatever his name is, let's not even get into his own controversies and who he aligns with and all the sketchy stuff that this guy, who he surrounds himself with in the Christian community, because that could be a whole nother episode. So it's like, okay, so we're going to take advice from these people who have their own situations. And it's like, so you're never going to watch any Netflix movie. You're never going to listen to any artist. I mean, if this is the criteria that we're going with, you have to say, I'm never going to listen to music. And again, the same people, by the way, Sean's worship music and the stuff he's done with Bethel and Hillsong and all the others, it's like, okay, so is he going to hold himself to the same standard and the people that he aligns with, where you've got these false churches and false preachers that are pumping out this worship music that everybody's listening to, but none of these Christians who are sharing Sean's post are saying, like, well, you're making actual worship music that is intended to worship God, that a lot of it is blasphemous. So see, we can all play this game. So the point is, it's ridiculous to say Taylor Swift is demonic. If you feel convicted personally about this song, by all means, don't listen to it. Nobody's saying you have to listen to Taylor Swift. So many people, I hate her, I'll never listen to her, blah, blah, blah. Okay, fine, don't. And the people that are worried about her swearing, guess what? You can listen to the clean album. There's no swears. It's like, it's people I don't understand. And all of these people that are complaining about this, none of them, I was, some girl tweeted me today, some girl named Morgan. She's like, repent, Alex Clark, for being a fan of Taylor Swift. I went and because she's satanic. And then I went to Morgan's Twitter and guess how many times Morgan discussed people that listened to Olivia Rodrigo when she was using her concerts to fund literal abortions in the past few months. How many times did Morgan tell people to repent for listening to Olivia Rodrigo? Zero. People have lost their minds. Taylor Swift is the one person. It's like people think their whole salvation hinges on, if I denounce Taylor Swift, I guess I'm going to heaven now. She's like the end all be all. It's just like ridiculous. If you don't want to listen to the song, don't listen to the song. But you all have to understand, she's not a Christian, obviously. To her, this is just religious symbolism. It's metaphors. It's figurative speech. Does she literally think that she is Christ who can die for people's sins? No. So that is my response to that. And I'll read some of your stuff. A lot of people saying I agree. JM says nothing about this album had anything to do with Christianity. And yeah, I would just say, like, so what are you listening to? If you're ever listening to the radio, then, because people are like, oh, there's a swear, or there's, you know, she's talking about promiscuity. Well, country music, they're talking about drinking, and they're talking about sex and hooking up. Can't listen to country either. Any 80s hair metal rock, can't listen to that. It's just like, but none of you are willing to do that. So coming after Taylor Swift, I just, again, think, if you, like, okay, I posted a short on YouTube, and I'm going to wrap up here, because now I'm just going to, this is what happens when I don't plan out what I'm going to say, because usually I, like, bullet point exactly what I'm going to do in these lives, and that's why I can do them in under an hour. Anytime that I just like, let it flip, let it fly, then I ramble and talk too long, so whatever. But I did a short on some kid who said that he felt convicted by God to not drink Monster Energy anymore. Does that mean that everybody needs to not drink Monster Energy? If you drink Monster Energy drinks, that you're not a Christian? No. Like, that's his own personal conviction. There are going to be things that are convicting for me that are not for you, and vice versa. And I also want to bring up, when I remember growing up, there's a woman at my church who said that she had to get rid of her Daredevil vacuum, that brand Daredevil, because she thought that that was demonic and she couldn't have it in her house. Does everyone who owns a Daredevil vacuum, are they not real Christians? No, it's just like a play on words, Dirt Devil vacuum. It's just a play on words. Does that mean that the vacuum cleaner is demonic? No. It's just like, can we be adults? That is my response. You can share this live or clip up. Somebody do be a deer and clip up this short section where I respond to these, and then you can post that or put it in the Cute Servitus Facebook group or do whatever you want. Put it on Twitter. But that's my response to all of this as what I would say the resident conservative Christian Swiftie that exists. Thank you. That's what I will say. Okay, I think I got everything. Thumbs up this video. And also, if there's nothing, I will say this, if there's nothing that happens throughout the course of the week, like if basically the whole pop culture news throughout the week is just still Taylor stuff, then I'm not going to do a live on Friday. I will, you know, take the rest of the week, like day by day basis. And if crazy things happen, like if, you know, Travis and Taylor get married or something, then obviously I'll do a live on Friday. But otherwise, if it's just the same thing and nothing interesting besides Taylor stuff, then I think I've already covered that the last two lives. So I probably won't go live Friday, because I have a spillover episode I'm recording that day. Anyway, I'm going to be super slammed, so we'll just play it by ear, and then we'll pick back up next week unless something crazy happens. Oh, and one other thing I have to tell you. Important. Where is the thing I'm supposed to read? Okay. One other thing. Thank you. My producer reminded me of something. It's not coming up. I don't see it in a personal chat. I don't see it anywhere. Literally not in either of these chats. So okay. All right, here it is. Okay, thank you. So she reminded me I'm supposed to tell you something. Okay, so this is totally not Taylor Swift related, but something important that I need to tell you. So I am going to be, I'll give you this little tip in advance. I am going to be interviewing on The Spillover, probably will come out in June, Joel Salatin. He is one of the biggest organic regenerative farmers in the country. He runs one of the biggest regenerative farms in the country. It's an hour outside of DC in Virginia. It's called Polyface Farms. I am so excited because in May, I'm going to be going out of town and traveling to do two on-location Spillover interviews. One is with somebody else, and I won't tell you who. The other one, which is in Nashville, the other one is going to be going to Virginia to interview Joel Salatin in person on his farm. And he's also, what's going on that weekend is the Rogue Food Conference. So if you are somebody who lives in Virginia or the DC area, this is basically the biggest regenerative farming food conference in the United States, and there's going to be tons of really cool speakers. This one woman who runs the largest raw milk share in Ohio, or like in the Midwest. There is Congressman Massey is going to be there talking, but it's like this massive, like basically the conference that you get a whole tour of the farm. They make you meals with the food from the farm for the attendees. Like, it's just the coolest thing ever. It's an over 200 acre farm, and it's like the biggest anti-big food conference in America. So it's all people that share these values of like how we're going to take down big food. And you can get tickets to go, and you can come with me if you want to, if you live in the area and you would love to go. I have tickets and a discount for you if you want to go, and then you can hang out with me and tour the farm and be there, and maybe you can even watch me do the Spillover interview. I'm going to be doing two interviews there at the conference because somebody else speaking is someone I want to interview also. So it is a two-day pass to tour and attend the Rogue Food Conference at Polyface Farm in Swoop, Virginia, May 17th and 18th. It's in the beautiful Shenandoah Valley of Virginia, learning about regenerative farming and living and how to plant the seeds of food freedom wherever you may find yourself. So even if you're not a farmer, if you live in a suburb, if you live in an apartment, this is teaching you how to go against big food, grow your own food, and just like understand the ins and outs of regenerative farming wherever you live. Okay. Okay, the promo code, if you want to go, what's the website? Okay, we put it in the chat, roguefoodconference.com, and the discount code, if you want to go, May 17th and 18th, Swoop, Virginia, Polyface Farms, is SPILLOVER30 for a discount to go. Sorry, SPILL30 for, what a mess, SPILL30 for $30 off admission. So if you want to tour that with me, and then that interview will be coming out in June. I'm very excited. I'm pretty sure he's been on Rogan before. Like, this is just like, he is the guy on organic regenerative farming and calling out big food from the agriculture perspective. I'm so excited. Like, he has been a bucket list guest for me. So anyway, thank you very much. Longest Publix Live ever. Love you, mean it. Bye.